So read Revelation 14, chapter 14, and just read the chapter first of all. I don't anticipate getting through the whole chapter. I guess there's maybe a few fewer people out than normal. The numbers remind me of just my free associating mind. I went to UBC for part of my university, and they had the paper there was called the UBC, takeoff on the Odyssey, I guess, but I didn't read it very much. But one article I read just for fun, it said last night the UBC Thunderbirds strengthened their stranglehold on last place when they lost to the U of Manitoba Bisons. And I thought, you know, it's like just looking at the fewness of the people that are out today. I thought I'm heading to last place in terms of attendance. So strengthening the stranglehold, it just struck me as funny. Anyway, hopefully you can put that aside as we read the chapter here. And I looked, or I saw, and lo, a lamb, or the lamb, according to the majority text, stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written on their foreheads. The majority text has having his name and his father's name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, or out of heaven, as the voice of many waters and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps. And they sang, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000, which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being firstfruits unto God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. And I saw another angel fly, and in the next section there are actually six angels, so this is the start of the angels. Another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting or eternal gospel to preach to them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen the great. Now the word city is omitted in the majority text, so I'm going to omit it here. It actually may not just refer to the city, it may refer to the system. Because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, her immorality. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or on his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receiveth the mark of his name. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. And I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle and reap, for the time is come, or the hour is come, for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. And another angel, came out of the temple, which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, which had power over fire, and cried with a loud voice to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vine of the earth, and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden without or outside the city, and blood came out of the winepress, even unto the horses' bridles, by the space of 1,600 furlongs, which are 200 miles or a little over 300 kilometers. So the Lord blessed to us just the reading of his word of this chapter. Now the chapter, of course, is set in a context. Just to briefly review, chapter 1, of course, speaks of the revelation of Jesus Christ. And then chapters 2 and 3 talked about the seven churches and of Asia, and we don't hear of the church again until chapter 19. So chapters 4 and 5 speak of the person of the judge. The judge, the Lord Jesus Christ. And then 6 to 19, big section, talk about the prophecies of the tribulation. And there's prophecies and there's intermissions, like a little bit of amplifications, if you will, or parentheses within these. But the seven seals are chapter 6 to 6 and 7, with a parenthesis there about the 144,000 chapters. Then come the seven trumpets, from chapter 8 to chapter 11. And then here, chapter 12 to 14, there's some explanatory prophecies. There's another parenthesis, and we've looked at that already, most of it. And then there's the seven vial or bowl judgments, chapter 15 to actually right up to the end, but there's a lot of parentheses in there as well to chapter 19. I'm not going to go any farther than that, but just reviewing the last two chapters, chapter 12 was the woman and the dragon, the woman being Israel and her son being the Lord Jesus Christ, and the dragon cast out of heaven, who is Satan. And chapter 13 is the chapter of the two beasts, the first beast being the Antichrist, and the second beast being the false prophet. And the reason that I believe that is that Christ himself talked about false Christs and false prophets in that order. So I think the first beast is the false Christ, and the second beast is a false prophet. And I think that the first beast is the Antichrist. And these are wild beasts, and Daniel did a good job on that last couple of weeks. So in chapter 14, verses 1 to 5 talk about the 144,000. And then there's the story of the six angels after that. So we have the six angels the rest of the chapter. And one is preaching the eternal gospel. One is declaring that Babylon has fallen. One is declaring what happens to those who worship the beast. One declares speaks about reaping the earth and harvest of the earth. And one angel reaps with a sharp sickle, and another angel from the altar comes out, and these things are cast into the winepress. And so there's three angels, a vision of Christ in the middle, and then there's three angels at the end. I don't anticipate actually getting into those angels that much. I think probably going to focus on the first five or six verses here in the first instance. So I think it's nice if we could integrate this chapter, part of this chapter, with the Old Testament. So I want to do a little bit of a scripture search with you as well, and hopefully you'll maybe be able to follow me along and maybe look up some of these references as well, just to show how the prophets of the Old Testament kind of mesh with this chapter. So he sees the Lamb on Mount Zion. So Mount Zion there is mentioned. And I want to look at Mount Zion in the Old Testament. This is an earthly scene. Basically, 1 to 5 is the end of the tribulation and going into the millennium. The exact time, I'm not certain, but I have a feeling it's the beginning of the millennium when the Lamb is reigning on Mount Zion. 144,000 are there, and they're the first fruits, bringing a harvest to follow. So these are this is the end of the tribulation and the beginning of the millennium. So let's just look at Mount Zion in the Old Testament, look at Psalm 2. At least I'm going to look at Psalm 2. I'm going to read it. I'm going to read some other scriptures. I'll reference them if you want to look them up. You can. Psalm 2, verse 1. Why do the heathen rage, or the nations rage, and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth have set themselves together, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, against his Messiah, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast their cords away from us. He that sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Then shall he speak to them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. So this is tribulation. Then he says, yet I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. So there he is. He's set on the holy hill of Zion. And this is, I think, really what's happening here. After the tribulation, after all these judgments, the king is set upon the holy hill of Zion. And then Psalm 48, great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God and the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. And then as well, the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 24, just trying to link all these Zion things together and show how they mesh with this with this chapter here. Verse 12, Isaiah, actually verse 24 and verse 13. When thus it shall be in the midst of the land among the people, there shall be as the shaking of an olive tree and as the gleaning of the grapes when the vintage is done. And then come to pass in that day that the Lord shall punish the host of the high ones that are on high, and the kings of the earth upon the earth, and they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and they shall be shut up in the prison. After many days shall they be visited. Then the moon shall be confounded and the sun ashamed, when the Lord of hosts shall reign in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before his ancients or before his elders gloriously. I think that applies at the same time as well. And then the prophecy of Joel. All these prophets in the white pages of the Bible, where we don't often look. Joel chapter 2 and verse 32. So 31 says, the sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered or shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, and in the remnant who the Lord shall call. So there's Mount Zion again. And then just over in Obadiah, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. There's a couple of verses in Obadiah as well. It's amazing how this all kind of links together. Obadiah 17. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possession. And then verse 21 as well. All the rest of it bears reading as well, but we'll just read 21. Saviors shall come up on Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. And then in Zechariah as well, Zechariah chapter 2 and verse 1 and verse, I've lost this one. Verse 6 probably. I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heaven, saith the Lord. Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwells with the daughter of Babylon. For thus saith the Lord, after the glory hath he sent me to the nations which spoiled you. For he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. So that's book of Zechariah. And There's all kinds of verses in Zechariah about this, and then in Micah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Micah chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, the last days, verse 1, the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains. Verse 2, many nations shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, which is obviously Zion, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he shall judge among many nations and rebuke strong nations afar off. So this is the Lord on Mount Zion in the beginning of the tribulation. Beginning of the millennium, prophesied beforehand by prophets of the Old Testament. So they are standing on Mount Zion on the earth, these 144,000, I believe, are the same as 144,000 of chapter 7. So they have in chapter 7, they were sealed and they were preserved as a result, and they came through the tribulation. Now here at the end of the tribulation, they're standing with the Lord on Mount Zion, and there they are. They're there, saved and standing on earth and ready to be with the Lord. And then he has their father's name and his name written in their foreheads. Now this is obviously a contrast to the preceding chapter, where they have the image, he causes, 13:16, he causes all small and great, etc., to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads. And no man might buy or sell except you have the number, his name or the number of his name. Now here, they have the name of the Lamb and the name of God in their foreheads, not the name of not the name of the beast and the number of the beast and so on. So it's a contrast there. And then in verses 2-4, it talks, 2 and 3 talks about a voice or a sound from heaven as the sound of many waters, and as the sound of a great thunder. And this is a heavenly scene now in heaven. So he switched from an earthly scene to a heavenly scene, just in a verse, just like that. He heard, and they sing, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts, or the living creatures, and before the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. Now the new song, it probably is the same as in 5 and 9, chapter 5, verse 9. The elders have harps and golden vials full of alders, and they sing a new song, saying, "Thou art worthy to take the book." Now, it may be another verse to the new song, because things have progressed since chapter 5. So there may be there's another verse come on to this new song. It's loud. It drowns out everything else. It's like the voice, the sound of many waters. If you've ever been to a falls like Niagara Falls, it's very loud there. If you get close to that falls, it's difficult to even talk back and forth. Voice of a great thunder. Thunder can be very, very loud, and sometimes it's so loud it seems like it's going to explode in your house, but it's just sound. It's not the dangerous part of that. That is actually the lightning. It's not the thunder. It's the lightning that comes out. So that is the voice of, and then they hear the voice of harpers playing on their harps. So there's music. And they sing the new song before the throne, these people. And before, they're a little bit different than the, before it was the four elders, the 24 elders singing. Now here is another group. And these are no doubt the martyrs of the tribulation. Martyrs of the first part of the tribulation and the last part of the tribulation. Because don't forget, this is the end tribulation, beginning of the millennium. And there's communication between heaven and earth. Heaven and earth are connected. And there's a direct link from the Lamb to the throne in heaven, and the sounds in heaven, and the 144,000 redeemed from the earth. They could learn that new song, because they've come through the tribulation. The people in heaven didn't make it. They were murdered. They were martyred by the beast and the false prophet and others as well that were opposing God. So that is the picture here that we're being presented with. Is that of a nice group of individuals? Now, just looking at them, what characterizes these people? Well, they were not defiled with women, for they were virgins. Most people, most commentators, were spiritualize this and say that it's not a physical purity that's referred to, rather it is spiritual purity. They're not mixed in with the world. They're separated from the world. They haven't been defiled with the world and with the worship of the beast. And they've come through the tribulation, and they are learning the new song. Now, one thing they're called here, and maybe leaping ahead here, is a bit, they're first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. They're first fruits. So what does that mean? Well, it means that first fruit means there's initial part of the harvest, and then the main harvest is to follow. Well, these are Jews. These are all Israelites. These are all people from the 12 tribes. I think they're, it's funny, the exclusive commentators say that, I don't know where they get this from, but once one exclusive says something, they all follow. They're like sheep. Jack Hunter said, commentators are like sheep. They all follow one another. Well, the exclusives are especially bad for that, because when one says it, they all have to say it. So they say that this is Judah and Benjamin here. There's absolutely no evidence for that. I believe they're the same group, the same 12 tribes. But if I want you to look at they're the first fruit, okay? So they're going to bring a harvest into the millennium. I want you to look at Zechariah chapter 12. Zechariah chapter 12. And, sorry, chapter 13. He said firmly, chapter 13. And verse 7. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, and against the man that is my fellow, the strong man that is my companion, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered, and I will turn my hand upon the little one. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts thereof shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and I will refine them as silver is refined, and I'll try them as gold is tried. They will call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, this is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. You know, it's amazing to me, and you think of Israel right now, I'm not sure what it's going to look like in the tribulation, but two-thirds of the people are going to be cut off, and they're going to die, presumably because they followed the beast. They followed the false prophet. And you know, it's what's amazing to me about that verse is that God is not afraid. It's another verse that says God is not afraid to judge. People say, well, how is God going to judge the earth? Like, how, what's he going to do with all these people? You know, like, there's so many people that don't accept him. What's he going to do with them? Well, he's going to judge them. People are going to be judged. God doesn't mess around. God does not mess around. He does not fool around. When it comes to guarding his holiness, his purity, his righteousness, think back to the time of Noah, and how many people, I think I've referenced this before, but how many people were alive at the time of Noah? We don't know. I've read, if you go on Google and type it in and population, you can read, it's 1,656 years after the creation, and people have done, you know, a number of people that they've engendered and length of time, how long they live, and trying to factor in all this stuff. But there were probably millions of people on Earth. I've read upwards of 2 billion, but I don't necessarily accept that high number. But there was probably millions. How many people were saved out of the flood? How many people passed through the flood and were saved? God's not afraid to judge. He just drowned everybody. They just drowned. Somebody worked out there was probably room for 15,000 people on the ark. So there was room. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. He preached probably for, I'm not exactly sure, but probably 100 years. Building the ark and witnessing, testifying, he was a preacher of righteousness. But people, people, if if they acted like people do today, they would mock him and scorn him and belittle him for building an ark when there was a flood coming and there was rain coming and all the stuff that they'd never seen. It's like that today. You know, you tell people there's judgment coming. People think things are going to continue as they have continued since the beginning of the creation. Nothing's going to change. It's just continuous harvest and reap and sowing and reaping and living your life. And then God's not afraid to judge. He destroys two-thirds of Israel. And he brings a third of them through. And he refines them. And they are, these 144,000 are the first fruits. And those third are going to follow these 144,000 into the millennium. So that's my understanding of how this is going to work out. So they are virgins. They are spiritually pure. They follow. They're undefiled. They follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. So they're tracking the Lamb. And you know, that's something that we should be doing as well. We should be following. You know, the Lord said to Levi, sitting at the custom in Matthew 9, receipt of custom, Levi who became Matthew, he said, follow me. And he said to his disciples, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me. So I sort of asked myself, how closely am I following the Lord? Well, to be honest with you, it varies. Sometimes I'm following more closely, sometimes less closely. But we are exhorted to follow the Lord. You know, Paul says, be followers of me, even as I am of Christ. The word there is actually a little different. It's imitators, but the thrust is the same. The idea is the same. This is really followers in the sense of following after. Those are imitators. But we follow, the only reason we can imitate Christ is if we follow him or focused on him. And I just, you know, I look at myself and I'm not going to preach at anybody. I'm going to preach to myself. And if a bit of it bounces off and goes back to you, that's good. So they follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. And that's something that we should do as well. These are redeemed among men. They're bought out of the slave market from among men. And they're first fruits. And I mentioned that already. They're redeemed. They're liberated from their sin, liberated from slavery to sin and to Satan, redeemed. And they're first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And the first fruits, you know, the millennium is going to be more than just a third of Israel and 144,000, but that contextually, I think that's what we're dealing with here. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Guile. I want to look at Zephaniah chapter 3, the book of Zephaniah, back to the Old Testament again. It talks about Zephaniah is one of those books that is rarely consulted. It's Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, sort of towards the end of the Old Testament. So chapter 3 and verse 13, I think. Maybe start at 11. In that day thou shalt not be ashamed for all thy doings wherein thou hast transgressed against me. That's verse 11. For then I will take away out of the midst of thee them that rejoice in thy pride, and they shall no more be haughty because of my holy mountain. I will also leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people, and they shall trust in the name of the Lord. The remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Remember John chapter 1. So this is Israel, no longer speaking lies, no longer full of guile. Remember John chapter 1? Just flip over to that. It's interesting. Nathanael. The Lord said to Nathanael, Jesus saw in verse 47, John 1, 47, Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and saith of him, Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. Nathanael said to him, Whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, Before Philip called thee, when they were under the fig tree, I saw thee. Nathanael answered and said unto him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God, thou art the King of Israel. So what do people who don't speak guile, what do they speak of? Well, they speak of the context, like in the context of Nathanael, they speak of Christ as the Son of God, Christ as the King of Israel. And I think that's going to be part of the guileless conversation that these people in Revelation 14 are talking about. And that's contextually, of course, there he is, the King of Israel, and ruling from Mount Zion, and Son of God, his deity. His kingship is his humanity. His deity is the fact that he's Son of God. So in their mouth was found no guile. In contrast to that is the confession of Nathanael. For they are without fault before the throne of God. And that throne, I believe, is the throne on earth, the throne of God. I think that's the setup of the throne in Mount Zion. They're without fault. That's the same word, actually, as, interesting word, 1 Peter 1 and 19. A lamb without blemish and without spot. And that word actually occurs several times in the New Testament. Ephesians chapter 5 and 27, for example, talks about a glorious church not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but holy and without blemish. There it is again. Holy and without blemish, no spot, nothing perfect, a perfect group of people. And it occurs several other times as well in Jude and the book of Hebrews and so on. I think I won't belabor that. But let's just say that they are without fault before the throne of God. They're before the throne on Mount Zion. That's where they are. And they're the first fruits. And they're going to be the first fruits of Israel. They're going to be the first fruits contextually, but also there's going to be a other great harvest as well. So it sort of covers that, those first five verses. Verse 6 talks about the angel. And now this, another angel comes, the last time angels were mentioned was actually in 11 and 15, the seventh angel sounded. And so angels actually haven't been mentioned until another angel, like Matthew, 11 and 15, says they fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting or eternal gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people. So what is how do we link this up? Well, I link this up with Matthew 24 and 14, if you want to look at that. Because I think it links up very nicely. I like the Newberry Bible a lot, but the fact that it uses Roman numerals, my Roman numerology is a little rusty. Okay, read verse 24 and 13, and because the iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold, but he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So I would associate that with this everlasting gospel. I think that I would understand that to be the gospel preached in all the world, and it's an angel that's doing it. Now, once again, commentators vary on who the angel is. Some say that angels never preach the gospel. Others say it's just an angel. Others say that it represents, for example, the believers on the earth at that time that are reaching the nations. It looks like everybody has a chance to hear the gospel. Now, we know right now that everybody does have a chance in some ways. The whole earth really does, through the internet, through radio, and through literature distribution, through the testimony of Christians in among these groups. Everybody does have a chance. This is another chance to hear the gospel, to hear. And what he's saying is, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. So I'm actually gonna close down there. I think next week we'll resume. I hope to be able to be finished next week. I think we're just gonna leave it there, and it's 1:45. So thank you all for coming.